She's one of the oracles of fintech in Africa, with a life that's rarely been dull. She started out selling newspaper subscriptions on the doorsteps of bigots. Now she helps entrepreneurs across Africa and invests millions in digital data. She saw failure, success and suffering, incarceration and a Free Rebecca campaign. This is the colourful story of tech guru Rebecca Enonchong, entrepreneur, investor and African optimist. It is very easy to warm to Rebecca Enonchong. As well as being an accomplished entrepreneur, she is a top-notch raconteur. When she tells her tales, it is like she is confiding in a friend. There is a glint of humour in her eye. Often, as she lays bare the absurdities in recounting the slings and arrows of life as an entrepreneur. She paints pictures with the words and oozes nuance in every sentence. The power of technology is incredible. There is no other industry that yields that kind of power, she says. You put technology and entrepreneurs together, that's where it's at. This love of language is probably down to the fact that her mother gave her books instead of toys when she was very young. Just before I sat down to write, out of curiosity, I sent a DM to the lady herself on Twitter to ask her what the first book she ever read was. Now, in these media-savvy, image-conscious times, heaven help us, a lot of people of her stature would have consulted their PR person and come back with a book like Das Kapital, or The Long Walk to Freedom by Nelson Mandela, or The Life of Robespierre, to convince readers of erudition and genius at a tender age. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang came back Enonchong on Twitter in 10 seconds. An unpretentious childhood fable, actually penned by Ian Fleming, the writer who dreamed up Secret Agent James Bond, based on a flying car and a kingdom where children are banned. It's been a tough year for the straightforward Enonchong, more of that later, but she's bullish about investment in the African continent. She quotes a survey into global venture capital funding by an outfit called CB Insight, slowing in the first quarter of 2022 to 7% year on year, while venture capital funding rocketed in Africa by 147% in the same period. That's incredible, she says. The pandemic has really affected investment around the world, but I think this has been a great equalizer for Africa, because a lot of times our founders cannot travel to meet investors in Silicon Valley or other places in the world because of the visa restrictions and the cost of travel. So all of a sudden, everybody has had to do it on Zoom. So one of the disadvantages for African founders disappeared through the pandemic. I think it contributed so some of the growth we've seen in venture capital coming into It gets better, according to Enonchong, in this interview with Billionaire Tomorrow from Douala. What I think is really great, especially last year and the beginning of this year, seeing the types of investors coming into the continent are no longer the ones that end in foundation, only impact investors. You're looking at real hard-hitting capitalists trying to make money. Venture capitalists saying, wait, we're missing out on an opportunity to invest in Africa. And we are starting to feel a lot more of that. It's important because Africans don't want to be treated as a charity. They want to be treated as partners. So the narrative changes. It was charity, charity, charity. How can I help these poor entrepreneurs, poor Africans, get them microcredit for the women, you know, get them so they can go to the market and spend. If the narrative changes and says, oh my God, there are unicorns on the continent, there is so much potential on the continent. Let's get in now so we can make a lot more money. Of course, we will make money as well, creating wealth and creating jobs. Enonchong believes fintech, that has bred so many billion-dollar startup unicorns, is far from its peak of moving money around Africa. She believes that whatever works in Nigeria doesn't work in Tanzania. M-Pesa is great in Kenya, she says, but doesn't work in South Africa. She believes each region will work out its own way of doing cross-border transactions in a difficult regulatory framework that still depends on central bank approvals country by country. Some of the countries, they really don't know what to do with fintech, and so the regulations are still being developed and created right now, and it is doing business on quicksand, because you don't know when they're going to ban it or make it illegal, like trading for an exchange, for example. Today it's legal, tomorrow it's illegal. Crypto today, it's legal, tomorrow it's illegal. There is no law, and so you don't know what regulatory guide to go to get authorization to do business in a country. So she says, reserving a little hope for the future. I think it'll take time before we have a Pan-African player. Flutterwave is trying to set up different countries, but it's very, very difficult because of the regulatory constraints. And that is something we are hoping the African Continental Free Trade Area is going to change, reducing these regulatory constraints that are preventing the scaling of technology. All of these hopes are fine, but if African nations fiddle with the internet for political reasons, as a number of nations have done, including the land of Enon Chong's birth, Cameroon, all bets are off. And then there is the cost. Internet is available, she says. If you look at the number of cables along the seabed that land in Africa, there is a lot of bandwidth there. So it's not necessarily a technology issue, she says. Because many African governments do want to control internet in some way, so they can shut it down during elections, say, it makes the competition for a third player to come in or a fourth player to come in. There is so much regulation there that they can't afford to compete against the telcos established there already, and the governments are also milking the telcos, and they get a lot of grief. And so the cost of being a telco, the cost of providing internet, is so high that the costs get passed on to the users, and it makes internet access in the internet a luxury, deciding on whether or not you're going to eat your next meal or connect to an important call. Less than a year ago, Enon Chong felt the full weight of the state bearing down on her following a bizarre arrest that made headlines across the continent. She laughs when I bring it up, but she wasn't laughing under lock and key in the grim gendarmerie military police headquarters back in August 2021 in Douala at the say-so of the Attorney General. On the document was Article 154 of the Criminal Code that refers to contempt of a public authority, an official, basically, she says. When diplomats asked the Attorney General why he did that, he said in French, lave la tête, which he had means like clean my brain, wash my head. It was like teach her a lesson, basically. Enon Chong said it all stemmed from an interview with officials to do with a real estate case. There was no confirmation at all the way we were doing certain things or the way we were handling some issues that related to me. I did question them, like, this doesn't make sense to me, but there wasn't any confrontation of any type, she recalls. Yet the word came through from the Attorney General that she was led to the cells. She refused to show emotion throughout her incarceration for fear of seeming weak. They didn't have a cell for women, so I was led to a cell with these hardcore criminals in a section where most of the violent criminals are held. They didn't put me in that cell, but they put me in an office. I didn't even know how to describe it. I was in the company of rats. It was very, very difficult. Very bad conditions. There was no bathroom facility, no toilet facility, no shower. If I didn't wait until next morning when they would take me to another office that had a toilet, I remember I had a bottle of water and I had to use one night because I couldn't wait. But that was the first time in my life I had to pee in a bottle. There was a Free Rebecca campaign run by her supporters who printed t-shirts, but demonstrations proved difficult. So you know demonstrations here are not allowed. You get arrested for demonstrating, you get arrested for trying to organise a demonstration. You can even get arrested and convicted for having a meeting about whether or not you're going to go to a demonstration, she says. They had made t-shirts, but they would wear them inside out so they couldn't see it, and said Free Rebecca in front of them. But a lot of people gathered at the courthouse out of respect for me. She was fortunate that outside 8 lawyers were working for her release, and she was spared the kind of rough treatment meted out to other inmates in Douala. People are tortured, and I was very lucky to get out before I was taken to jail, because I had ended up in prison. To get out is a legal nightmare. There are many people I know who haven't gone to trial and have spent years in prison, she says. Eventually, Enon Chong walked free without charge. Many people would have been on the first plane out. Credit to Enon Chong that she's stuck by her business, Abstec in Douala, a business she has arguably seen through thick and thin. In 1999, she founded Abstec, then known as Fintech, a digital fintech company that nearly sank before it swam. I had no clue how difficult it was going to be, she says. Yet the first year was good for Abstec, a rapid growth. Enon Chong wrote a business plan for 1.8 million turnover in the first year revenue, and turned out to be 2.2 million. By 2004, we had a revenue of $40 million. Then it came crashing down, says Enon Chong. It was my fault. I did all my plans. We had a business model, a subscription model, way before anybody was doing subscriptions. We were providing services, but in a very innovative way. We were doing support, and I'd been in the industry for a few years and understood how important it was for large companies to support their Oracle-based applications. It was so complex, you would have to hire an army of people to manage your systems. Enon Chong's company came up with three plans: 9-to-5, Monday-Friday support, extensive support, or 24-hour support. It promised economies of scale. You could have one team of experts working remotely on a number of companies. As we hid behind the product and told people to choose their package, and they sold like hotcakes. They sold around the world, Australia, Russia, Hong Kong. It made it easier for companies to sign a check, and they didn't have to worry about hiring people. We were saying, hey, we're going to make sure your systems work, $40,000, $50,000 a month. We would sign contract after contract. All was well until the company took out loans and poured money into one of the biggest customers on the continent, and the company didn't pay. We took out a lot of resources we had from overseas, and they worked on this project for over a year. They were happy, they were using it, but they didn't pay their bills. It was a loss leader. We didn't expect to make money on it, but we also didn't expect to lose money, as much money as we did. Because the company had been raking in so much cash, it didn't even have an overdraft to tide it over. Some of the other telco customers were also struggling, started to cut corners and not pay on time. The business lost focus. There was a huge mistake on my part, she says. The salvation of the business, she says, was a pivot into voice-activated data systems that gather information from your country's financial systems. It is being aimed at small businesses. Where did Enon Chong learn her skills as an entrepreneur? Harvard? Or an MBA, maybe? Neither, in fact. It was selling subscriptions to the Washington Post to a bunch of uninterested bigots in Washington, D.C., where her barrister father had relocated the family. It was her first job. She was 14 years old and selling door-to-door in what they called the Archie Bunker suburbs, where no one wanted to read an expensive liberal paper like The Post. Archie Bunker was a US TV comedy character full of racist bigotry. The Post employed mainly a bunch of black children to sell subscriptions, with an idea that the more determined and unlikely the seller in the customer's eyes, the more likely the sale. Also, the newspaper understood the market because the more affluent suburbs already subscribed. I learned so many lessons from that one job, and that they carried me through my entire life as an entrepreneur. I think the symbolic door that slams in your face, it means so much. It means being peppy and positive before you reach the next door. She recalls about a job where she became the top seller through rain, snow and blinding sunshine. I always learned. It was the product first. I used to hold the newspaper up when they opened the door. Then there were also 10 refusals that people always gave. I went away and worked out answers to them so I could come back. I still do that even when I was arrested. What are they going to come up with? A bittersweet teenage doorstep experience that was set... A bittersweet teenage doorstep experience was to set up Enon Chong for life, and you get the feeling that she's only just started.